Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. You want to talk budget and tax?
Woo! You ready?
Yeah,
I'm ready. You're heated.
I'm heated. Yeah, I'm frustrated by this whole thing. Yeah.
So here's the thing. There's a whole bunch of parts to this budget that's come out.
Yeah.
One thing that's hit our clients, our listeners and viewers of this show, and to many of our guest clients as well, is the change in capital gains tax.
Yep.
And so I think we should spend some time around the capital gains tax and what it's designed to do with the budget. And let's get it from a tax perspective first, and then we can get into the political side of it after that.
Okay, we've got Brian Ernewine joining us, senior advisor at KPMG and Canada's National Tax Centre. Nobody better to help us put some perspective on this. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the opportunity to join you both.
Well, listen, it's the federal budget's called Fairness for Every Generation. I might take offense to that, but before I do, I'm going to give you a crack at this thing. I'd like you maybe just to address the changes in the capital gains taxes that are happening, and then we can dig into some of that.
Very good. So it's a big change, first of all. I mean, it goes without saying when you see that the government's booked nearly $20 billion in additional revenue to it for the next 5 years. Effectively, it increases the capital gains inclusion rate from 50%. So today, 50% of your capital gains is required to be brought into your income, to two-thirds. So 66 and two-thirds of your capital gains going forward, subject to an exception, will be taxable going forward. So to translate that, for example, in Ontario, capital gains, federal, provincial combined, are taxed at around 27% today for the top income earner, an individual. That goes up to about 36%. In the Wild Rose province, you're a bit more fortunate. I think that your current rates are about, your top rate is about 48%, about or exactly 48%. So half of that today is 24. After June 25th, because there's a transition, that goes to about 32%.
And so one thing that was been mentioned over and over again by the federal government is that this budget and this change in capital gains only impacts 0.13% of the population. Is that true, Brian?
I assume it's true as they've measured it. There is a carve out for the first $250,000 in capital gains annually for individuals and only individuals. So for a large percentage of the population, they won't have anything approaching that on an annual basis, perhaps over their lifetime. And so it does exclude a large proportion. My I guess caveat to that or challenge to that statistic is that there's a lot of us who have perhaps a one-time gain that will be over that amount. It could be the family cottage, it could be the family farm, it could be some other asset. So although it only happens once in your lifetime, it might be, you know, given price appreciation we've all sort of felt on real estate in the last few years, you know, that cottage that maybe came from your grandfather or your father and has got a very low cost to you, and now just in land value might be worth $500,000 or $1 million. It's pretty difficult to sell that cottage, you know, by $250,000 a year. So you could end up being one of that part 0.13% for that particular year where you sell the cottage and recognize a $500,000 or $1 million capital gain.
This is the one-time issue that you're talking about that I think is going to be the biggest problem and the most conversation about planning. In our role as portfolio managers, we can trigger a capital gain because the stocks and bonds that we own are liquid daily. So we can just get out at any point in time. When you have an illiquid asset or an asset that you can't sell in portions, what's the conversations happening with tax advisors, let's say at KPMG and its clients, on what are the options that is presented in front of a person that they could do knowing that this rule change has happened?
Well, I think the government has made the necessary right decision in not trying to apply this change as of budget date. I think there would have been a lot of pushback if there'd been no opportunity, no window to think about sort of reacting to this. But the window they've provided is pretty short. It was 10 weeks as of budget day. It's getting now to 9.5 weeks. Opportunity to get the 50% inclusion rate for individuals without limit, for corporations without limit, but only until June 25th or June 24th, in fact, of this year. That's going to make a very hard decision for a lot of people. So let's say one of you have the family cottage, the situation I described. You don't look at the age or stage where you probably were planning to sell it next year. But if you were, or if you're thinking about it being 3 or 5 years out, there's a very hard question as to whether or not you actually accelerate that to get the lower 50% inclusion rate today versus paying a third more in 1 year or 2 year or 3 years time. And people just don't know. They haven't thought, they weren't thinking before the budget about whether they'd face this decision. So there's really going to be some hard reckoning, I think, that has to take place, and in a very short window.
The challenge will also come to middle-income Canadians who have to make this decision. And I'm saying that because I would take the assumption that high net worth individuals have some liquid cash. Mm-hmm. So if you do have to trigger some sort of capital gain in this calendar year, you have some liquid cash to pay the tax bill. But if you've got the family cottage, or you've got a rental property, or you've got a commercial property that you've owned, and you now have to trigger again, but you don't have liquid cash, now you've got a problem. You might have to just either suck it up or borrow the money? Like, are those the options for people who don't have that liquid cash available to pay, 24% on or 27%, on the gain?
Well, it can be an issue. I mean, if you really are selling, if you can manage to find a buyer in the next 9.5 weeks, then you will have the cash. You'll have some proceeds from the sale. But if what you're striving to do instead is to trigger an internal sale, sell it to your children or sell it to your spouse in order to trigger the realization at current capital gains rates, then you run into the liquidity problem you described.
How much of this timing issue is just going to create basically a windfall tax, a one-year tax, revenue bump for the government this year? And is there any merit to the idea that that's part of what the government wants to see happen, is this triggering of a windfall tax to them?
Well, I think the government does expect that there will be some acceleration of gains as a result of this. I'm forgetting my numbers, but I'd mentioned there'd been close to a $20 billion 5-year revenue gain over this. Something like $7 billion, is their estimate, $6 to $7 billion, I recall, as being the revenue estimate for the first year from this, dropping to 3 or 5, and in fact dropping to a very small amount in the third year. I think it's only be fair to assume it's the view that there will be some people, and a large number of people, triggering capital gains on properties that they might be planning to dispose of in the next couple of years anyway. I will say that as between having made this effective budget day and giving nobody any opportunity to sort of take this action and what they've done, I prefer what they've done. But the part and parcel of the problem is the fact that they're taxing already accrued gains and giving people a window to pay a lower rate of tax on that than they might have to in a little bit of time.
Brian, let's turn the clock back. Let's say this budget wasn't announced and you're in the position to create the next tax policy. Knowing that there's a whole bunch of programs that your administration wants to put through, like the current administration, how would you have done the tax side of things?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not going to bite on that. I actually was in that role for about 35 years in the Department of Finance in Canada. But what I did was gave my advice to the political level and they made the decisions.
Fair enough. Let's turn on to housing. We've got another problem in Canada, housing. Your thoughts on the budget with respect to trying to help solve the housing issue?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that housing was probably the number one priority of this government. And I think that reflects the interests of Canadians. KPMG actually did a poll before the budget of business leaders, and they also identified housing as the number one priority, which was interesting. But when you drilled in a little bit, you understood that they weren't just being sympathetic to Canadian individuals. It's actually a business concern. Their ability to attract and retain talent depends on housing affordability. They either can't get the people they want because of the cost of living, the cost of home ownership or rental, or they have to pay a lot more in terms of salary costs to recruit and retain. So I think it's an important issue. I believe the government was right to address it, and I actually sort of see it as a productivity issue in terms of future growth and investment.
Brian, we've got to leave it there. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to help dig into some of the details.
Appreciate it again. Thank you very much.
We've been joined by Brian Erneweyne, Senior Advisor at KPMG and Canada's National Tax Center. My friend, we got to put it all together in a comprehensive plan to get people through retirement.
Yeah, the upcoming seminars are two of them, one in Lethbridge on May the 7th, 7 p.m. at the Sandman Signature Hotel, and in Calgary, June 4th at the Carriage House Inn. You need to register for this. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
All right, join us after the break for a political take on this new budget. We've got the Conservatives joining us here on QR Calgary and More Than Money.